Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Food Without Borders, a show about food, culture, and identity. I'm your host, Sari Kamen. Today I'm going to air an interview I recorded several months ago in Philadelphia with the owners of South Philly Barbacoa, Christina Martinez and Ben Miller. Christina Martinez is an undocumented Mexican immigrant. She crossed the U.S. border in 2008 in order to try and earn enough money to pay for her daughter's education. While working in the kitchen at a restaurant in Philadelphia, she met Ben Miller, an American who was also working as a cook. The two fell in love and decided to get married. Not long after, Christina was fired from the restaurant for being undocumented. After a long and difficult journey, Ben and Christina managed to open their restaurant, South Philly Barbacoa, a warm and colorful spot for handmade tortillas stuffed with the type of slow-cooked tender meat that Christina grew up cooking in her native Mexico. Not only is South Philly Barbacoa a place that draws hungry patrons in for authentic tacos and fresh squeezed juices, it's also a gathering place for local community organizers to strategize and a safe space for events in support of undocumented workers' rights. Despite being helmed by an undocumented immigrant, Bon Appetit magazine named South Philly Barbacoa as one of its best restaurants in America in 2016. The interview that you are going to hear now is with Christina and Ben. Because Christina speaks mostly Spanish, Ben does most of the speaking as he translates for Christina.
She came across the desert with great difficulty, like everyone. It's not easy because
no hablo inglés.
I don't really speak English.
Los trabajos.
Oh, she didn't speak English when she came.
Mm-hmm. Para los trabajos, primero te preguntan
for the work. Sí. The first thing that they'll ask you is if you speak English.
Y tardó un mes buscando trabajo.
It was 1 month before she could find a job. Look, you know, 1 month of like looking, like walking in the streets every day, asking, you know, everyone.
Did you come right to Philadelphia?
Yeah, aquí estoy en Philadelphia. Posteriormente encontré un trabajo en la compañía de Mark Vetri por 2 años.
And then she went to work in the Mark Vetri's company, and she was there for 2 years.
Ah, y es donde conozco a Ben.
And that's where we met.
Oh, okay.
Nos casamos, fue muy, nos casamos pronto.
We got married.
Y yo pierdo mi trabajo porque no tenía yo un número de social para trabajar.
And she lost her job because we brought it to the owner's attention that, you know, the number that she used, you know, to get the job was a fake number, you know, and that we are trying to do things.
What number? Do you mean like a social security number?
Yeah, okay. Like a fake social security card. And that, you know, we want to, like, figure out how to do things the right way.
Oh, okay.
As we're going through the process of getting Christina's documents in order. And they said, well, we didn't know that her papers were false, so, you know, come back when you get it figured out.
Mm.
Which is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lie. And if I would have told them right there at that moment, as there's a dozen guys working there.
Sure. Like,
all
of course.
Don't have papers. Or would they have let them all go because of now they're conscious of this thing? No, these guys don't. So, but that was how that was what happened.
But it sounds like they were making an example out of Christina.
No, I wasn't really even making an example. I mean, because it was very hard for them to lose Christina because at that point she had lost her assistant. You know, she went there working as a prep cook, but because of her work ethic, and she was able to like advance into the pastry department, which she never had any experience with pastry. And then, like within a few months, was the head of the pastry department and like had a key. They were giving her like health benefits.
Wow.
She had an assistant, and then the assistant was gone for like 2 or 3 weeks, like to the point where, and then one of their little mixers broke, and she had to like do everything by hand, all the like whisking of egg whites to, and all this kind of stuff. It's crazy, and she's working like 7 days a week on salary. It's like, you know, they're not gonna you know, ax you.
Yeah.
You know, like, no way. Like, right. You're too valuable to this company, and you know, we're just really trying to do the honest right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this was an advice of a lawyer, right? Turns out this lawyer is a hardcore Tea Party supporter, like conservative, like taking in all kind of immigration clients, and you know, but she's like a conservative columnist in the Daily News. So we didn't know this. She gave us really bad advice and Christina lost her job. So that's where we're at in the story.
At that point, Ben had already left the Mark Vitri restaurant and was working at a friend's Chinese place. Just as things looked like they were going well for Christina, she was newly married and had a steady job with benefits and a salary. She found herself unemployed. Christina went out to try and find a new job despite not being a legal U.S. citizen. Ben felt responsible for Christina's firing. It was his idea to come clean about her fake social security number. He thought the restaurant would understand and support them in her efforts towards gaining citizenship. He was wrong, and Christina lost her job.
She was walking around. I mean, she was, you know, crying every day. She was trying to find something. She was trying to hustle. And, you know, was, you know, went out with the basket of quesadillas and would sell them to people in the street and was helping friends out at their restaurants, and eventually she finally landed a job at a bakery, and she was making like terrible money. It was it would be like 13-hour day for like $60. And she was like moving this place forward also. Like, she was doing like specials, like the tiramisu that she made over there, they're still selling it over there.
Did you regret at that point coming to the United States? Did you wonder if that was a mistake?
Pues cuando no encontraba trabajo, sí, pero después, pues ya tenía una estabilidad con Vetri. Después, bueno, ya fue.
Yeah, like before she had a job at Vetri, she was, you know, had doubts, and then she landed that job and she had stability.
Pero tenía que estar aquí más tiempo por seguir con la escuela de
carro. But it was kind of just like, she had to stay and figure it out and make sure that she was.
But did it kind of
earning enough money
change in, your? Did you feel differently? Did you see America differently than how you had pictured it?
Se cambió cómo te ve Estados Unidos después de eso.
Sí, pues sí, porque no tenía yo menos derechos que los inmigrantes por el proceso de nuestros documentos. Bueno, que los demás compañeros latinos. O sea, que quería yo trabajar en un lugar, pero no tenía ID, entonces no podía trabajar donde yo quería. Sí,
para los
ID
falsos, ¿es mejor o no entiendo?
No, que ya no pude, ya no hice un ID falso y ya no pude trabajar, entonces me sentía yo más abajo que los demás.
Oh, yeah, so she felt that now that she wasn't using a fixed social security card, that now she was even pushed down further than the rest of the immigrants who were working with one, even though they were fake.
Right.
And that, you know, that affected her. She was working at this bakery, right, and working the counter, baking stuff, doing all this stuff. And that's when we did a one pop-up with Barbacoa, and you wanted to have a restaurant over there, but we didn't have any money. And so she did a pop-up and one night, and it was, she just kind of did a pop-up in a failing restaurant.
Mm.
You know, they closed shortly after that, but they wanted her to, like, take it over.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, we don't have any money at all. It's not a good idea. But, you know, even though maybe it's different now, but it was always, like, every 2 or 3 days, she was like, oh, I found this place, like, we don't have, we still don't have money. So
you really had this idea. Yeah.
I mean, well, she's, I mean, backstory on Christina is that from 6 years old, she's making barbacoa with her family.
Okay.
And, you know, her brothers cook barbacoa, her parents cooking it for 60 years.
Yeah. And but, what city are you from?
Toluca.
Toluca.
Capuluac, Estado de México.
Yeah, Capuluac is the name of the, uh-huh, of the town where she's from and where, like, the big barbacoa culture is. The,
gotcha,
the closest,
okay,
major metropolitan area is Toluca.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that's what she's done her whole life, is cook barbacoa. Mm. So she decided to cook barbacoa in our apartment, you know. And so she would tell the guys who were coming in the bakery in the morning for their coffee, you know, I'm cooking barbacoa in my house on Sundays, like, come over at 7 in the morning. And, yeah, people started to come over at the apartment and buy her barbacoa. She was selling it by the kilo, and then some people would, like, eat there. And then, like, that grew. Every single week, it grew and grew and grew.
As much as Ben tried to deny it, it became apparent that Christina was determined to have a barbacoa restaurant. Word continued to spread, and their apartment became a makeshift pop-up each week. Christina started to get catering jobs at parties for 100 to 150 people. All of the barbacoa was cooked in their apartment kitchen, and they had to buy new equipment to keep up with the demand.
I would love to just hear you talk a little bit about how, you know, barbacoa is so much your identity and your life, how you, it seems like you have to cook it.
¿Cómo está la barbacoa? Es como tan cerca de su identidad, como sientes si no estás cocinando barbacoa.
Oh, creo que...
It almost sounds like you didn't have a choice.
No. Pues sería un cambio total, pero pues ya también.
It would be a total change, but
yeah,
also
pero,
that might be something she could do.
Pero pues igual va a haber un tiempo que ya va a venir alguien a hacerlo mejor y.
Oh, and she said, and also there will come a time where there's gonna be someone that's gonna come along and cook it better, you know.
No.
that's just the thing, you know. It's not like. Everybody cooks barbacoa in Capuac, you know, but it's like, it's not a competitive as much as, mm-hmm, like, you know, his is delicious, or like the pancito is delicious, and people, you know, and that kind of, like, it's all high level, and, you know, it's making more better products come into town, and, you know,
sí, y algo que es
the whole town economy
es que
is built on that, so it's
que
like,
estar como en paz
it's all better.
Cocinando. Mágico.
One of the really important parts of cooking the barbacoa is, like, you really have to be in, like, a peaceful state of mind when you're cooking so that the meat, like, mm, comes out good.
Yeah, this is very important.
Yeah.
It is really important, and, you know, like, the whole sazón and the kind of the sazón, like, the seasoning, mm-hmm, you know? It is an important ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
This, yeah, is a passion. We make a very nice meal, very nice products, very... Okay, Ben, is happy. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. If I try to start an argument, which is like, no, you have to leave because, like, we're cooking.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. For a long time, I'm looking for...
Whatever is going on, you have to kind of just be in a right state of mind when you're cooking, because it's going to cook all night, and really it will just, like, something bad will happen or whatever.
Yeah. But it was so important for you, even...
Because it takes a lot of, like, focus and concentration,
yeah,
and all this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was so important for you, you know, even though you were no longer in Mexico, even here, to find a way to keep cooking barbacoa.
Well, pensé que era tan... I want to say what I think, too, is, mm-hmm, is that it's really the thing that she knows best, and,
mm-hmm,
that she's, like... You know, has a craft that she's a master,
right,
in,
yeah,
so it's like it makes more sense to do that than anything else.
Word continued to spread, and Ben and Christina's landlord started to get suspicious of the foot traffic that would happen on Sunday mornings. For a while, they were able to placate their landlord with tacos and extra rent, but that could only last for so long. Ben and Christina began their search for a restaurant space where they could hold a legitimate barbacoa pop-up restaurant once a week outside of their home.
We had a couple things that we're looking at, but I was, like, riding my bike home from work, and one of the guys who I worked with, he was a busser, and I'm at Canela, and he was, like, cleaning his parents' food truck. And I said, "What's this?" And he said, "Oh yeah, my parents have a food truck. Like, it's like It's a food cart. Mm-hmm. You know, they sell like cheesesteaks and hoagies and cigarettes and coffee and stuff like that out by the hospital on Monday to Friday. I said, you know, do you think your dad would let us use it on Sundays? And so, like, I wrote his dad a letter and explained the idea. And, you know, like, my proposal is to give him $100 a day to use the cart. And so he said, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So he said, yeah. And this was, this was like the end of January. So it was, like, super cold out. The first day that we opened up, it was right in front of the bakery where she was working, because she knew there would be people there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so we were, like, digging out the ice from the road so that we could pull the cart in. But we sold out of everything at, like, 11 o'clock.
Wow.
And we had cooked, like, that day, like, double what we were cooking in the house.
Yeah.
So then next week we cooked double that, and we sold out by, like, noon. And so then we just continue, like, doing more and more and more. Eventually, the bakery started to be, like, you know.
Yeah. The guy is the bakery. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Despite not selling anything but barbacoa tacos, the bakery was concerned that the cart was taking customers away. A confrontation ensued, and Ben and Christina were once again looking for a place to set up shop. As luck would have it, Ben found a for-rent sign on a building near the bakery where they had previously parked.
There was, like, a for-rent sign one day on this building on this corner. And Christina was like, you know, find out this guy. We saw one guy going in there one day, and it was, like, at the end of a Sunday, so I had, like, cash on me. And I was like, look, like, we want this place. Like, here's the down payment. And he was like, yeah, cool. So we moved into this place right across the alleyway from the bakery. So the next week, we opened up with the cart, like, it's in front of the apartment now. And now we started selling drinks, too, because they're like, fuck you guys, you didn't want to work with us. So... And that grew and grew and grew, too. And we started to get mobbed on. And then we opened Saturdays, too. Mm-hmm. So we're doing Saturdays and Sundays. And, you know, we would get big crowds, especially in the summertime. But and then I was like, running deliveries, like, in my bike or my car. Like, I was, like, running deliveries from the cart. Like, it was crazy. We had at one point, like, four or five people working with us at the cart.
And people could call in delivery orders?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Well, were you working full-time also?
Yep.
Monday is
end of the day.
No, there's no day for me. So, yeah, I mean, in that apartment, like, I built, like, a huge prep table. We had, like, our two candy burners, like, in the back. And, like, the whole apartment was also, like, a factory. Then we eventually had, like, got the garage and the... Like, this apartment came with a garage. It was $800 a month. It was awesome. And then, so I installed, like, a sink in the garage, like a big sink, and we had, like, freezers and stuff in there and, like, all the dry storage. So, like, we slowly are just, like, turning into a restaurant. And kind of, like, near the end of the year and a half that we were a food cart, like, it was one, like, kind of racist neighbor that kept giving us shit. He would call the streets department, LNI, the health department, whatever, like, and really just riding us about all this stupid shit. Really was that the neighborhood is a different color than when he grew up in it.
Right.
And whatever. But on that same corner, there was prostitution and drug selling and murders, maybe a couple murders, you know, right on that same corner. And we're there, like,
yeah, that's all fine,
playing,
though.
Like,
yeah.
Happy music.
Yeah.
And, like, people feeding are eating people. Tacos. And, yeah. So, whatever. But we did start to feel, like, super under pressure. Like, and then the one time the LNI, they said, oh, well, this cart has to be parked on the sidewalk, not on the street. And we were always parking in the street. Uh-huh. And so... Then, like, we, like, tried to put it up on the sidewalk. It was, like, super awkward and no space. And it was just like, yeah, this is getting, like, a little more tenser, you know, especially because we are cooking in my house. Mm-hmm. Like, we're nervous about that already.
Right.
You know, there was not a whole lot of good stuff going on.
Down the block from the cart was a vegan restaurant. Several of the cooks who worked there were not exactly vegan themselves and would stop by the cart for tacos on their way to work. Ben and Christina established a good rapport with the owners of the restaurant, who informed them that the vegan restaurant was closing soon and the space would be available. After the neighbors called Law and Immigration Services on them yet again, Ben and Christina knew it was time to leave, and they were able to reopen in the former vegan restaurant.
Yeah, then we're in here, and then, like, every week, also, we're still trying to, like, move it forward. So, like, you know, there was a wall here, and so, like, 1 week, we would just, you know, knock the wall out and put the table back further, and, like, you know, the 1 week, we would paint, and then the next week, like, people would come in, and like, oh, it's a different color.
Yeah.
So, baby steps.
Yeah, yeah, but it's still, it's still like that. Mm-hmm. We're still, like, just bringing in big pieces that are new all the time.
Yeah.
Like I just got this like really awesome chopping block like a few weeks ago on my birthday. This guy, you know, he made us like a real like cross section of a tree chopping block.
Oh, cool.
Like a 50-year-old tree, and built us like a new box for the barbacoa. Like the box that we were using for the last 4 years.
Yeah,
there's a wooden box, right? The perfect size for the setup that I have, and we had just found it randomly in the thrift store. You know, this wooden box. And
it's
a lot of little pieces like that, and a lot of like, you know, is I feel like because we kind of came that way. It's like every pot and pan and spoon in here has some story behind it.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Not only is South Philly Barbacoa a restaurant, but it's also been a hub for local activism and advocacy, particularly as a place where the rights of undocumented workers are defended and immigrants' contributions to the restaurant industry are celebrated.
It's a scary time, you know, in a lot of communities. It's a palpable fear. But I feel like we're going even harder with the activism and with the messaging, and stronger with, you know, what we're really trying to do. And, you know, I look for the, you know, the most extreme case, you know, which would be, you know, they raid the restaurant multiple times, you know, and I wound up in jail, which, you know, well, first of all, would be a lot of fines, right?
Why would you be in jail?
Maybe as an owner, you know, for...
For what? For harboring?
Yeah, what do they call it? Having undocumented workers. They fine you, right? But then if you repeat the offense, you know, I would crowdfund it. I would say, look,
This
is it. We were targeted. But I think the eventual penalty could be jail time, which, you know...
What about the threat of Christina's deportation?
Yeah, then... The moral of the story is Christina knows how to cook barbacoa, and we'll like have a barbacoa in Mexico or in Cuba or wherever we wind up.
Yeah. So have you talked about that possibility? Like, is ICE in the neighborhood? And I mean, it seems very brave that like you guys are advocates because you are undocumented and there is such a real threat of it.
Actually, like, it gives us more safety and more of a network and more of a structure. Like, we know all these lawyers and activists that we wouldn't have known. And we have, like, tons of people that would give us pro bono advice or jump in to protect us. And, like, by being, like,
so vocal.
You know, it's like, it would be a PR backlash for you know, for that. Like, that would motivate people more.
Yeah.
And,
so you're not
scared.
I mean,
worst case scenario is if it's deported to Mexico.
Yeah.
Then my message is, okay, you're pushing out culture. You're pushing out tax dollars that we're going to pay in Mexico now.
Of course.
And U.S. tourists will come and visit there. We'll have the clientele of people who already know the food in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to work with fresher ingredients that are locally grown in Mexico, of the cactus leaves and on the cilantro and the corn that we're using. So it's really
so that's
better,
not yeah that's not a scary possibility
it's
for
better
you.
To be in Mexico.
So tell me a little bit about the advocacy work you guys are doing and how you're connecting with other undocumented restaurant workers and restaurants, sanctuary restaurants.
The sanctuary restaurants is something that that's coming from ROC that they organized, and you know, we signed up to be on that. But the work that as we've seen it is to try to tap into the Well, we have already a platform because of the food, you know, as restaurateurs, and the power or influence with socially and politically and economically, because it's a billions of dollar industry that's connected with other industries. You know, it could be used for really. Like if it was unified as a voice to really push for, you know, at least the issue of immigration into the mainstream, where it's not reaching a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people may or may not know what's going on locally or nationally, but what are following chefs, and I mean, I think it's probably less and less that people are so not plugged in, but I guess there still are people. But just seeing the food media as a way that can unify people, also to try to get chefs to speak up and talk about the issue the way it really is, you know, that this is the way that we have to run, this is the industry, you know. Try to talk to former restaurateurs that, you know, can kind of say things a little more freely, or maybe have people talk anonymously or whatever. What we've tried to do is, we've just been trying to have a call to action for a long time, and then we, you know, they ran a story about that in the newspaper, and then someone gave us $1,000. ¿Están aquí para comer? Oh, hello.
Hi.
We're only open on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays.
Really?
Yeah.
Darn. Okay.
I'm sorry about that.
Thanks.
There's a lot of great food right in the neighborhood here.
Where? Give us a place.
Brigantessa. What time is it? Is it 5 yet?
No. 4.
4. What's around here right now?
I have
a lot of places open at 5. So somebody gave us $1,000. You know, they read the article and like, here's $1,000. Like
the Bon Appetit article?
No, this was like an article in the Inquirer.
Oh.
Where we were saying, you know, chefs need to step up and protect the undocumented staff, and let's acknowledge that there are people here and they're doing work. And it was on the front page of the Inquirer. Somebody gave us $1,000.
Nice.
At the time, we were like having monthly community meetings here. We would just like take the tables out and people would just come in and we'd say, this is the issue that we're talking about. And there was a chef there, I said, Elijah, he's in LA now. He said, well, like, let's do a collaborative dinner. So it came together really quick, very easy, like all in one day. And we had a dinner. It was like 4 or 5 chefs. And people would, you know, like Christina shared her story. Another girl, Karina, who was from the USSR, immigrated through Canada, but was undocumented, right? But now USSR doesn't exist anymore. So she's stateless and undocumented and doesn't have a country to be deported to.
Hmm.
You know, so she shared her story and the owner. And then we held it at Nomad Pizza, which is just like a pizzeria in South Street. It's a nice pizzeria. They have a second floor dining room, and that's where we had the dinner. And the owner of Nomad spoke to about how he immigrated and he was undocumented for a while, and you know, a couple of their workers were there, and you know, and it was kind of, and then we had music. We had my friend Shakur played percussion, and there was a trumpet. It was cool, and then we had something on the screen too. So we had this event, it was kind of crazy, you know. Like I made a Facebook event. I said, call my cell phone like after 2 o'clock on this such and such a day, or send me a text. And then I just wrote them all down in a notebook, and it was like it was completely packed. It was cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
That was, and then that actually made money. We said, just donate whatever you want, because we didn't want to have a suggested donation, because we didn't want to make it exclusive for people that have money. So, but people were generous, and then so it was like, okay, now we have $1,000 plus some.
Mm-hmm.
So then we did another dinner. We did 11 of them, and we're trying to you know, collaborate with more people and have more people share the story. We invited, like, you know, local activist groups to come and talk about the work that they're doing, like the Juntos and the New Sanctuary Movement and the NSC, and like different people from these different groups have come to different dinners and just talked to the, like, every dinner was different.
Christina faces the challenges each day of being an undocumented restaurant worker. She would seek citizenship, but the U.S. government has made it extremely difficult for her to pursue this course because she previously crossed the border illegally. Ben explains.
Right now, she could go on the path by going to Mexico for 10 years and then applying for a waiver, right? And then, you know, I guess she could get a green card, and then after a certain amount of years, you get something else, and then you can get a...
But why can she not get a green card now? Like, because you guys are married.
So if somebody comes in from Poland and they you know, are a student and they overstay their visa and they get married to an American citizen, they can change their status while they're here. The difference is the people that are coming from the South have something else that's tagged on, which just says unauthorized entry.
Oh, right.
This is really an intentional way of trapping people, you know, because this is applying to people that are coming from South America, and people are saying, you know, I have to go back to the country and live there for 3 years or whatever. You know, I'd rather stay here and
so they just want you to go through like all the proper channels. Yeah.
Well, I mean, another way of looking at it is really. By design, you know, it's like it's holding people here, you know, like Christina.
Thank you so much for listening to this special episode of Food Without Borders. And thank you to Ben Miller and Christina Martinez for sharing your story, and to Isha Dev of Saffron PR for arranging our interview. You can learn more about South Philly Barbacoa at southphillybarbacoa.com. And if you're in Philly, be sure to stop by Friday through Sunday at their new location on South 11th and Morris. Tune in next week, Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. EST on www.heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.